Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
And welcome to Defrag. Today on Defrag, we'll be talking about Syria for the full hour. Wrong show notes. Yeah. No, today we're going to do the tech support thing today. We thought we'd kind of switch it up and cover tech support stuff. So first question from Charles. I have a kiosk, all-in-one machine, that is running Windows 7 Professional. The auto login user is a standard user. One of the functions of this machine is to run an antivirus scan program. The program requires elevation. What is the best way to allow the standard user to run this application? The application's launched from a menu program that was developed in-house. I have a program that will allow the user to run it with elevated privileges, but they still get a UAC prompting. Is there a way to do this and disable UAC? Or without disabling UAC.
Right, so we don't want to disable UAC. The thing is that you're running as a standard user.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of different ways of attacking this problem. First of all, I would take a look at the AV software, because fundamentally it should not require elevation in order to do a scan, because a scan should be done as a service or as a kernel-level driver. Only the UI needs to, you know, interact with the user, but that doesn't need to be elevated. So I would go... One of the approaches would be to fix your AV software so it doesn't need to run elevated. Mm-hmm. There's numerous AV software out there that does not need to be run elevated in order to do a scan of a USB drive. In fact, most will just do it background scanning.
Yeah.
The other approach is that if you must use this AV scanning software, you're seeing that you're invoking it from an in-house program, mm-hmm. from a menu option in an in-house program. What you could do is from that same menu option in the in-house program, you can have a service that actually launches that UI. Now, really don't like that option, because then you have UI running on the user's desktop, running as a system account with elevated privileges.
Yeah.
Really would not like to go there at all, but have to give it out as a potential option, mm-hmm. depending on how locked down this thing is. Because the reason that's an issue is that if you have any kind of vulnerability, which is ironic, in a AV scanning software, it's now running with elevated privileges on that standard user desktop.
Yeah.
So best course of action is to actually revisit your AV solution. Second next option is to launch it from a service, mm-hmm. But I really don't like that option.
Yeah. Okay. All right. From Derek. Hello. Love the show. Hope you can help. I have a corporate laptop running Windows 7 64-bit in Office 2010. When I tried to open one of my OneNote notebooks from SkyDrive, I saw that in File Open, Open from the Web, there is the following message. This service is disabled by policy. I should note that I have a local admin on this machine, so I should be able to fix it, but I don't know how.
So this one we kind of went back and forth on, and after a while I realized that his machine is part of a corporate machine, so yeah. he's on the domain, which means there are domain policies, mm-hmm. being pushed on the system. Fundamentally, it doesn't really matter if you're an admin on the system, because the domain admins are going to override it.
Yeah.
No matter what you change, they can just change it on you again.
Yeah.
So in order to be a good corporate citizen, the thing that you can do is talk to your admins and say, you know, disable this policy. Mm-hmm. Now, if you had the same kind of problem, but you're not joined to a domain, one of the things that can cause this issue is if you had a previous version of Office installed, and there are some settings that are lingering around for whatever reason, or you had an old policy that was pushed down and you're no longer joined to the domain. So you can easily switch that by going to the registry, and here's the values that you would need to change. HK current user software, Microsoft Office Common, create a new key, call it web integration, add a new value, call it web integration enabled, and set it to 1.
Okay.
Now, if it has a previous value there, obviously, you know, change its value to 1 or delete it and then recreate it again. You may have to log out and log back in order for the setting to take effect. OneNote and Office has background tasks that are running, and they may not actually read this key afterwards. But thing is, again, if you're on a domain, got policies pushed down, they can override this.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
And you don't want to get your IT people mad.
No, not your IT people. From James, I've been testing Internet Explorer 11. I was wondering if there is a way in which to turn tab browsing off in the Windows 8.1 preview. I've always been able to turn it off in previous versions, but I could not find a way to turn this off.
Unfortunately, it has been pulled. That particular option to turn off tab browsing has been removed from IE 11 in Windows 8.1. I actually went digging into why it was removed, mm-hmm. and I couldn't find a reason.
Okay.
It was basically a bug.got file that said, please remove it.
All right.
Okay.
Done. All right, from Andre, got Windows 8.1 from MSDN and installed it. Why do I see this watermark? I have secure boot disabled to dual boot Windows 7 native VHD boot. So I know that secure boot is off. Can this be removed via a GPO? Which group policy?
Group policy.
Yeah. What's the O stand for? Group policy?
Override.
Okay.
No. Oh, I have no
someone
idea.
Someone will tell us.
Somebody will put in the show notes.
It's right down there.
I don't ever refer to it as GPOs. I refer to it as GPs.
Yeah.
Group policies. So okay. I don't know why there's the O there. So that secure boot watermark that you're seeing is, I don't have it, of course. It would be down in this corner.
Okay.
And it's there as a protection for the consumer.
Yeah.
So when they're buying a machine, if they see a machine that has secure boot is disabled or is not configured properly, that is an indication to them that there's basically something wrong, because new systems that are UEFI, that are secure boot enabled, they shouldn't be secure boot disabled unless for testing purposes.
Yeah.
So that's why it's there. And no, if it was easily dismissible, then that would be a bad thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, from Robert, I saw this webcast, see below, on how they use ProcDump to hack passwords of a system without admin access or antivirus seeing the hack. I was really surprised. I can lock ProcDump down, but are there other Microsoft programs or diagnostic programs that can be used in the same way? I think I'd be interested in knowing about this. Can you talk about it in one of your shows? Thanks. Keep up the great work. I've learned a lot.
So this is the webcast that they're talking about from Revision 3.
Yeah.
Cracking passwords with Rubber Ducky. This is a USB dongle that can show up as multiple devices. They have a special firmware mm-hmm. that shows up as a hid device. So that's like a keyboard mouse
yeah.
plus a mass storage device at the same time. So this kind of goes back to the principal tenets of computer security.
Is yeah.
that once you have physical access to the machine,
yeah.
you own that machine.
Yeah.
Now,
physical logged in access.
For this particular case, yes, it requires that you be have access to the physical machine, be logged in as a user of the administrator group.
Yeah.
And be able to plug in this device at the same time.
So the discrepancy we have is the question that came into us says, of a system without admin access. So that part isn't accurate, right? Because he has admin access.
Yeah,
here.
So in this video, he has admin access because one of the things to run is ProcDump taking a dump of LSASS.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, you need admin privileges.
Yeah.
So what this particular tool does is you plug in a USB drive, it tries to execute something that then navigates the UAC prompt, clicks OK,
mm-hmm.
right? So that he's basically emulating the user. So this is, you can take a dump of LSAS on your system
yeah.
today as an admin user. You can do it as a standard user.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting hack, you know, just, mm-hmm. hey, it's interesting to be able to take a dump of LSAS and then crack the password from it.
Yeah.
Is it a real security risk? Well, again, you have physical access to the machine. One of the ways of preventing this is to actually run BitLocker
mm-hmm.
and then shut down your machine or hibernate your machine.
Yeah.
That way you're not, you know, giving access to a running, working machine that's, mm-hmm. that's logged in. Also, don't run as an administrator. That's a little bit harder to do. You yeah. know, even this machine I run as part of the admin group.
Yeah.
Many of my other machines I run as a standard user.
I don't have any machine that I run as anything other than administrator.
Well, the difference is you have two accounts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your primary account is one that you're a standard user on, and then when you need to do any kind of administrative things, you log in with the admin
yeah.
account.
I get that part. I'm just...
You just don't do it.
Not gonna do it, yeah.
Again, it's not the default way that Windows ships, so
yeah.
it's one of those things you kind of have to train yourself to do all the
time. It's a good security practice, don't get me wrong. It's just something I don't do.
Most people don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, enterprises will do it,
mm-hmm.
but most people don't do it. But that is a way of preventing it.
Yeah. I don't wear my seatbelt when I drive across campus either, which I should, I know, but I don't.
Like I say, I like this this tool because it's just interesting, right? You don't normally have to worry about hardware being plugged into your machine.
Yeah.
But it is actually becoming the case where, you know, random USB sticks, you know, you have to be worried about it. In this particular method, because it is injecting keystrokes, because it's emulating a HID device, actually bypasses malware scanners, because it appears as if the user is actually doing it. And of course, an AV scanner is not going to throw a warning saying, yeah, you're taking, you know, a dump of a process, because that's a potentially a valid thing to do.
So and you're logged in as administrator.
And you're
anyway,
logged in as administrator.
So who would stop you?
Right.
Okay.
So it's an interesting hack. Well, an interesting tool, I'll give it that.
Yeah, yeah. But the long and the short of it is, if you have access to a logged in with administrator account machine, if you have physical access,
then you own it.
Forget it.
You completely own it.
I mean, there's just, that's it.
You're no different than the owner, right? If you're logged in, physical admin access, how are you any different from the owner? The computer can't tell.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is you should be concerned about random
thumb drives. Random pieces of hardware,
someone just sticking something into your computer. It's
absolutely. If you find a random thumb drive on the ground, I would not be plugging
keep
into
on
a work.
Walking.
Well, I would definitely never plug it into a work machine.
Yeah.
If you have, say, a VM, you know, you really desperately want to know what is on this in order to return it to its owner.
Yeah.
That might be something that you're willing to try. I don't know. I have, you know, random non-network PCs at home that I would use for that, but more often than not, I'd probably just pass it by.
Yeah. Okay. All right, from Robert, I saw this same question. From Philip, is in Windows 8, is there any way to show the full pass when copying? See below. And he sent this picture here that we'll take a look at.
So that's this picture. Running concurrent operations, basically you're getting the name of the file that's being copied, but you're not getting the destination folders that are good.
Yeah, you might have like two music directories on your machine, not know off the top of your head which one it's copying to. And the reason it doesn't show full paths,
the reason it doesn't show full paths is that your dialog would be constantly resizing.
Yeah.
You know, do you want a nice felt copy dialog? Do you want one that's taking up the full screen? Do you want one that is constantly showing different folders that are being copied that are changing rapidly?
You could show part of it where it's cut off, and then you could like grab it and throw it back and forth, but do you show the end? Do you show the beginning? Do you show the beginning of the last directory? Or it's just, this is good.
Generally speaking, you know, this is the details view, which is again not the default view anyways.
Yeah.
When you're showing the fewer details, it doesn't show you the graph or anything like that.
And in reality, you did this copy, so you should have a pretty good inkling of
what's of being
where you did that anyway.
Right. So unfortunately, there is no setting for that.
Okay. All right, pick of the week time. Pick of the week. And the first pick of the week, of course, is the Windows 8.1. If you have an MSDN account now, you can
TechNet,
you can get the 8.1 RTM update. So, Gove, tell us here. We got a Googs post from Googs blog.
Yeah, there was some previous grumblings, comments, opinions about the fact that we didn't have 8.1 available on MSDN.
We were going to let developers get it when everyone else got it.
Right.
And that wasn't going to persist.
It was apparently something that we decided to reconsider.
Yeah, it was the right decision to reconsider, too, because developers need that time to, of course, you know, test things and make sure everything's okay before they deploy it to their enterprise or update their apps.
And then for end users, too, right? Yeah. So that they can get updates ahead of time so that the transition to 8.1 is seamless.
Yeah.
Highly recommend waiting, unless you desperately need it, until GA, because more updates are constantly being done to refine it.
Yeah.
New things for OEMs and for applications that we didn't know about at RTM time. You know, there's more partners that are producing updates, making sure that everything works.
Yeah.
So I totally recommend testing it out. Have a backup of your primary machine if you're putting it on your primary machine.
Yeah.
That's with any kind of update, though.
Like,
I'd say the same thing for a service pack. You know, always have regular updates.
Yeah.
have a restore point, you can create the USB recovery drive, which is very easy in order to get back to a previous state. And, you know, as part of this, of course, Visual Studio 2013, so you have the dev tools in order to build 8.1 applications. You know, we recommend you take that, try it out, develop some apps, make sure that you get the new features for 8.1. And there are definitely new features that you'll hopefully like.
And what's one of your favorites? Name something you like in 8.1.
I don't have 8.1 running on this machine because I unfortunately can't show it.
Not your version anyway.
Not my version. The multiple apps on one screen is no longer limited to the one-third, two-third snap views. They are completely fluid.
Nice.
I like that a lot. I also like the fact that when you launch a new app, say, if you click a link in your mail app, what used to happen is that a modern IE would take full screen.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen anymore. It'll go split screen, so you don't lose your context of what you were working on before, and then you can resize. And, really cool thing, if you have a large enough screen, you can have multiple apps in split view mode on that one screen.
Yeah.
So you're getting more into the, you know, being able to truly multitask, getting it a little bit better for desktop use in the modern environment as well. It's not quite so jarring.
Yeah.
Again, it's an evolution of what we did in Windows 8, and I think it's a really good evolution.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so the second pick of the week this week is Larry's upgrading his PC at home. So this is my home PC, the one I use all the time. And the thing that spurred this was Windows 8.1. I wanted to install it. I'm still on Windows 7 at home because I haven't had the machine in a state that I want to format it until now. So I just got everything backed up, cleaned up. I got like all my rockets backed up from Kerbal Space System. There's so many like subdirectories you don't even think of where you'd lose that if you didn't think to back up some of those things. So I got this ready, and I was like, well, I need a little bit more RAM. Not that I need it for Windows 8, but I want it. So
what
then
were you running before?
I had like 4 gig. It was just, I need more than that. So then I was going to buy RAM, and I was like, well, why am I buying this old version of RAM? I should get a new motherboard. Well, if I get a new motherboard, I need a new CPU. Yeah. If you give a mouse a cookie, blah, blah, blah. Went on. Now I have a new PC, which is nice. But I want you to walk through all the different components I got. You can tell me how badly I did, because I know that you'll be critical of any decisions I made. So the first thing is I went with a Rosewill power supply, which is 750 watt, and I went with that because it had a ton of connectors on it, and it had really good ratings. But if you know Newegg and Rosewill,
or would you rather let our users comment on that particular?
Well, I think on this one particular product, I probably shouldn't let you comment. you weren't thrilled with my choice of power supply.
I just personally would not have gone with that particular power supply.
Yeah.
You know, 750 watt, I don't know, did you do a calculation based on what type of wattage power supply you were going to need?
Yeah, and I was more looking at the calculation of what connectors I need. I mean, I've got an Oculus Rift on order. I want to make sure that, you know, all my components for this machine are kind of focused around that. That's
interesting.
Important to me. Not that the power supply matters for that, but still.
What kind of warranty?
I don't know what the warranty is. I don't really care what the warranty is. At this price, I'll buy two of them if I have to.
You know, frankly, going with that, I would have done buying a second power supply just in case. Because what you don't want to have happen is, you know, your power supply goes in a month and then you're sitting for a week waiting for a new
power.
Well,
that's what overnight shipping's for. And Newegg's so fast. Boom, there you go. So
that
was that. The next thing I went with was a ATI Radeon HD 7950.
Not a bad card.
Yeah, and so I went with that. I've always been an ATI person. I went with a GeForce on my last one, and I want iFinity. And I've never had a setup where iFinity worked before with the cards that I had. Mm-hmm. And then I got GeForce, and there just was no option for that card to do multiple monitors spanned into one. So I want to do that, and so I got this card specifically because I do multiple monitors. So
I hope it works. Again, I don't have anything particularly bad to say about the card, right?
Other than you were saying that I should have 4 video cards in this machine.
Well, you want to drive 4 monitors.
Yeah.
Right?
But I don't need that. They don't have to be 300 frames per second per monitor is the thing. I only need to get up to the refresh rate of the monitor.
You'd also need to buy new monitors if you wanted to do that.
I need you to talk to my wife. All right, so the next one was I bought two sticks of 16 gig RAM DDR3.
Nice.
And so I figured I can always add two more sticks, get up to 32.
Mm-hmm. Is that the max your board can...
Yeah, it's got four slots, and yeah, I went with the fastest RAM that I could put in there, and then I got two, so that'll get me a 16 gig. And my idea there is that I'll do a RAM drive for my swap file for like Photoshop and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's fine. Remember when you're putting the RAM in to match the color for the channels on your motherboard. So normally they're what, black and blue?
Yeah, something.
So you have like, colors. You know, a black and a blue, a black and a blue, and just remember to match them.
So if I have a black and a blue, a black and a blue, but I put one in each blue or two in the first blue?
No, one in each black or one in each blue.
Okay.
Depending on which one is your zero slot. I don't know which one is going to be your zero slot.
Okay, all right. And then the next thing was I went with a Core i7 4770 Haswell 3.4 gigahertz.
Yummy.
Which, you know, I'm not going to spend too much on the CPU. That was kind of the best price point.
That's
on the curve.
Do you say quad core?
Quad core.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm got dual core now, so I wanted to step it up.
Right.
And then I got a ultra quiet CPU cooler to keep that thing quiet, because that was the main thing. I want to keep it quiet with SSD and everything. It should be pretty good there.
Did you go water cooling?
You know, I thought about that, but I ended up not doing that. And I don't see my... Oh, I bought my motherboard off Amazon, so it's not listed here. But I got an Asus board, which was... It looked pretty good. It was... I forget what type it is. I'll link to it on the show notes so you can see it there. But
I
like Asus.
I tend to like them as well.
Yeah.
I was also looking for my own systems to see what I wanted to upgrade to for my server box. I was looking at the various chipsets for the new systems. The Q chipset, I think, is probably the best one.
Mm-hmm.
What's an interesting feature with that and Intel chips is that you get remote access via the BIOS over the network.
Yeah.
Which is really cool for a server setup, because my server setup is headless. Mm-hmm. I've got it stuck in my closet.
Nice.
And now I've got this 7-inch Lilliput screen that I got hooked up to it, because I don't want to drag on you know, a 19-inch monitor every time I want to see what's going on in my BIOS.
Sure.
But I've got this tiny little screen, and then you know, one of those foldable keyboards, the gel keyboards. Got that, and every now and again, if I have to do something in the BIOS or upgrading it or whatever, I have this tiny 7-inch screen that I'm looking at and this weird little keyboard as I'm in my server closet.
Yeah.
But for my next one, I want to get the ones with the Q chipset, because that'll allow remote access, which is perfect for me.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of boards that are out there that'll do it. The Asus, the latest Asus boards will do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you built, you know, a pretty decent system.
Yeah, it's not too bad. There's six USB 3 ports on the board. That's pretty cool. The board has a couple other cool features. Like it's got...
Does it have TPM?
Yeah, it has TPM. So
awesome.
Happy about that. I won't have to have my card to log on to CorpNet. But there's a button on the motherboard, too, that you can hit. So when it reboots, it goes right into BIOS. And you don't have to try to hit keys and stuff like that in the beginning, which I thought was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why we didn't think of that many, many years ago, but... Yeah, so that's kind of cool. One thing I want to ask you, though, is I'm going to get a second 256 gig SSD.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was wondering, should I use my first SSD for OS and, you know, some critical applications to get the SSD filled up a little bit, and then another SSD that's like where I install all my applications, or should I RAID 0 the two SSDs and throw the dice and get ultimate speed?
Yeah, that's just it, right? You throw the dice. So
you throw the dice really big, because
one drive goes out, you lose your system.
And SSDs seem to be, maybe it's just my own personal bit flipped on this, but they seem to be a little more...
Touchy?
Things go wrong with SSDs more than they do with platter drives, it seems.
Are you going to be doing regular backups, and can you handle your system being offline for any length of time?
Look, I'm still running Windows 7 on it because I didn't have it in a state that I could just format it, so I can't say for sure that I will have regular backups all the time.
Well, either way, right? So if you have the two drive system, the one running your OS could die.
Yeah.
Right? So then you lose it.
I'm going to be starting from scratch.
You're running the risk of starting from scratch.
Yeah.
Your second drive, while you will have, if you install applications to it, then you're a little bit more screwed because the registry settings and stuff are, of course, on your first drive.
Yeah.
If all you're doing is having it for data, then you're fine. You don't have to worry about that one, mm-hmm. right? So that one you can just pop into any other system.
Yeah.
If you're raiding it, you can't really do that. Yeah. That's the other problem with the raid. Are you going motherboard? If you want to do it, would you go motherboard raid?
Yeah.
So if you're going motherboard raid, then if your board dies, then you have to replace it with the exact same board because you can't just take those drives and put it into mm-hmm. any other system necessarily.
Yeah.
So with just bare drives, you can move them around. They're a lot more portable.
What would you do?
This is a critical machine?
I mean, anything critical is going to be on an external drive. It's not going to be on SSD.
But is the machine itself critical? Like, does it have to have 5.9 uptime?
No, it doesn't have to. If something catastrophic happened, I could be okay with being down until I get it repaved.
Oh, okay. Well, if it was a more critical machine, I would actually buy another spare SSD.
Yeah.
Keep it at home.
We're not running Microsoft.com off of it. Let's put it that way.
Are they the same drive? The upgraded drive?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, see, if they were the same drive, I probably would have said go RAID.
Yeah.
But they're not the same drive, so I'd go separate.
They're both 256 SSDs, but they're different brands. So they're different drives. And yeah, I thought about that. I also thought about that when I got the two sticks of 16 gig RAM. Am I going to be able to get the exact same RAM in the future? Because I don't want to start mixing up different types of different models, brands, whatever of RAM in the same machine.
I went through the exact same problem when I built my server a couple years ago. I only stuck 8 gig of RAM in it.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of hitting the ceiling based on some of the workload that it's doing right now. So I just bit the bullet and bought 32 gig.
Yeah.
And while it's okay for me to have this extra RAM lying around because I have parts all over the place and I build new machines or new old machines out of the parts that I've gotten, then I donate them to people that need them or to schools or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's not really a big deal for me. But from now on, when I'm building machines, I'm going to be maxing out that board with the maximum amount of RAM that it can handle.
Yeah.
That way I don't have to worry about will I ever find the exact same RAM again in order to match them up properly.
Yeah.
I don't like having to worry about that.
All right. Well, I feel pretty good then.
I think it's fine. I think if you wanted to wait a couple of months and get another 16 gig, I think you should do that.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I would want to get now still would be...
Because it costs, about $150, $140 for the 16?
For one 16, but I want two of them, so it's $300, and I don't want to spend another $300. I got 16 gig of RAM. I mean, come on, 32 is a little much, right?
It's never much.
No, it's not. But the one thing that I wanted to replace was my monitor, and I was looking at different monitors. I don't know, the price point on... I want high resolution is the main thing.
And funny enough, 1080p is not high enough resolution anymore.
It is not. Isn't that weird? And I mean, it's so hard to find something that's over 1080p that's big. Because the other thing too is I'm using two 42-inch monitors on my desk at home now. I want big. So.
And how much do you want to spend?
Yeah, not that much. I don't want to spend anything really. But
Apple Cinema monitors are like
way too much.
Way too. They're way too much, but they're nice.
So here's what I was thinking about doing. Sears has that 4K TV that's like $700 for a 39-inch and $1,000 for a 50-inch, and it's 4K. And I thought, well, I'll just get that. I'll drop a 50-inch 4K right on my desk. It'll be awesome. Mm-hmm. Have a ton of resolution there. And since it's on my desk and close to me, everything being small won't be that big a deal, and I can turn scaling up to 200%. But the thing that got me about that, I was talking to Gavin Gear about it, and he's like, yeah, but that TV, when you go to game on it, the highest refresh it can do is 30 hertz. And so, you know, you got that. So
you'll have ghosting all over the place.
Yeah, so I don't think I'm going to... I'll stick with the monitors I have for a while and see what happens.
You know what you could do is just to verify it, take a laptop to... Wait, is that Sears?
Yeah, Sears, yeah.
Sears, plug it in, play the game, see what
happens.
That's
a good idea, yeah. I think I'll try that out. I mean, if I can take it there, then I'll be like, all right,
test before you buy, right? Like, if you're laying down a grand,
yeah,
They should be able to say, yeah, just plug in an HDMI cable and
nice.
Try this
I'll take
out.
My HP Envy. It's got the horsepower.
There you go.
Awesome.
Yeah, you can ride it there.
Yeah. I'll just sit and play games in Sears all day long. And
your HP Envy with its fan, you know.
Yeah.
If you're on water, it'd be a hovercraft and take you right there.
People will complain about the noise. Exactly. Can you go ask him to turn that fan down? That thing's way too loud.
All right. You take that machine and put it into the refrigerator that's over in the next section.
All right, so that's a show for this week. Email us, defragshow@microsoft.com. Leave comments in the show notes. We like the email. Go back and forth. We're here to help. See you next week.